to do the wrong. It's not a crime.
It's not a crime
to strengthen the small. So we got runaway child. So we got runaway child. It's not a crime.
It's not a crime
to do the wrong. It's not a crime. Strengthen the smaller one. Show the help of your own
self-confidence. Self-confidence.
You can be what you want to be.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. For a copy of this show, you can call 1-888-741-GODS, G-O-D-S. That's 4637. So, yeah, we're in the middle of all kinds of roiling things. Everything that Ed Rosenthal, our wonderful guest, our teammate, our part of our collective soul was saying during the break was like, oh, it's too interesting. Oh, we can't talk about anything. We have to save it all for the air. But let me just pitch one other thing out there, too, that this is a tipping point time, and the planetary story also is strong. Again, remember, believe nothing, entertain possibilities, but here's part of our collective strategy team. On February 15th and 16th, Mars and Pluto will come together in the sky, which in boring old predictive astrology would be considered volatile and dangerous. But the quality is, again, it's like Catherine says, either communities sustainably work with their resources or toxic predators will move in and do that for us. And in the same sense, a sense of potential or possibility that's available intuitively, planetarily, it is up to us to animate it in the direction we want. So Mars, Pluto, not explosive volatility of insane testosterone, but testosterone and estrogen devoted to stirring the cauldron of cultural rebirth. And on February 22nd, Mars and Pluto, still pretty close together, will oppose Saturn. This is the finale of Saturn's structure of world opposite Pluto, death, rebirth, in Sagittarius, the court, storytelling, all of those things. This pattern began brewing in late August of 2001, and it will culminate February 22nd. Now, as you know, I mean, because we just feel these things, we don't even need to know them, many things are going on February 15th and 16th. In New York City on February 15th, there's a huge anti-war. Well, actually, it's more than anti-war, it's more than pro-peace. This is really about, you know, a culture of life, the yay life culture emerging that Rosenthal is such a crucial voice for. On February 16th in San Francisco is, again, the yay life emergent culture, peace, yes, and no war on dreams, no war on creatures, and others around the nation as well. Also, the second Visionary Art and Video Conference will be in San Francisco, February 15th and 16th at the Palace of Fine Arts. Also on February 15th, Denis Kucinich will be declaring his run for the presidency, which I think I think we can work with that team for innumerable reasons. So it's time for everyone to step up right now. And as you were saying, Ed, too, that you've gotten a lot of support from the community. And this sense of responsibility, and we also want to be in a world where those of us in similar circumstances to you are responsible, but you also get replenished. So you've been saying that you are getting replenished.
Oh, yes. You know, the Beatles said, the love you get is equal to the love you make, and I've been getting 2-to-1. I mean, it's just the amount, the love of the community has been overwhelming and very supportive.
And so part of what we'll go to callers in a moment, too, but part of your current strategy is, one, what's your first step? You want misled grand jury, new trial?
That's right. misled grand jury, and we feel that the judge made so many errors in the courtroom, specifically errors of law regarding estoppel and estoppel. Estoppel is when an authority says to you, it's okay to do something, and then you get arrested for it.
So, and then the Gestapo comes in.
Then the Gestapo comes in instead of the Estoppel.
Yes. Okay, we want Estoppel, yes, Gestapo, no.
Right.
Okay,
that's yes, so that's one. And then the Commerce Clause. You know, the only relationship of the federal marijuana laws to marijuana is when there's interstate commerce, or that's the way it should be. And nothing that I did was involved with interstate commerce. It was all interstate. I grew the marijuana here. It was for California patients who grew it in California upon a California doctor's recommendation. Where's the interstate commerce? So that's another thing. And then another was that selective prosecution. And I was selectively prosecuted. They went out after me, and they gave drug dealers and other people immunity to testify against me just because they wanted to get medical marijuana. They felt if they got this trophy, they felt I was a trophy because I'm fairly well known and I've written books and I've been an activist. And they felt that if they could get me, then they can get anyone, and it will put fear into the whole community, and they're going to close it down.
So in a sense, you are Arctic. Drilling in the Arctic becomes a symbol for we want everything.
That's right.
And so we want Ed Rosenthal and we want to drill in the Arctic. And we go, no, you can't have either one.
That's right.
Yeah. So, yes, and then Judge Breyer, his brother is Stephen Breyer, poor guy. He was on the Supremes, and so there.
Yeah.
So number one is new trial. Number two is appeals, which might go to the Ninth Circuit, which has been, again, a thin membrane of positiveness also as well, because they've been the crucial part for environmentalist victories in the courts. And the Ninth Circuit environmentalists scored their biggest victory last month when the Ninth Circuit lifted a lower court's injunction and reinstated the Clinton administration's rule designed to protect 58.5 million acres. So the Ninth Circuit, we go, yay.
Yes.
Yay, Ninth Circuit. So
sometimes.
Yay, sometimes.
Yes.
Okay, yay, kinda.
Yeah.
All right, so a half yay. Well, what have they done that, where have they not been reliable?
Well, just recently there was a ruling about people who worked for the United States under the Bracero program, and money was deducted from their income, and they were supposed to receive that after a period of time. And instead, the Mexican government, the United States, and the First National City Bank divided up the money. The people who earned it never got it, and the Ninth Circuit said, sorry.
Mm.
They shouldn't have done that.
Okay, so we have to send them prayers as well and
talk
to their spiritual supervisors.
Right.
Let's go to our first inadvertently patient caller, Larry in San Francisco. Come in.
Assalamu alaikum.
Yes.
Ed, you've been so much in our prayers.
Thank you.
You know, I'm not a lawyer, but I watch the practice, so I guess my education is pretty much complete. I had a couple comments and a question. Leaving aside the question of jury nullification, I think fairly the jury could have found you innocent just on the elements of the crime, because one of the elements of any crime is criminal intent, and you simply didn't have any intent to do anything wrong. You're helping people,
but they didn't know that.
The judge wasn't
allowed to come in.
But the judge told the jury specifically that intent was not an issue in this case.
Actually, but it's all criminal intent is always an issue. If you don't have criminal intent, there is no crime.
Well, I don't want to argue about this. I'm not saying whether that's right or wrong. But the jury was following the orders that the judge gave them.
Right.
And they were trying to be good citizens. They were trying to do the best that they could. And they just weren't aware of how deceptive the judge was being.
Right. I think maybe a solution to all this would be a federal marijuana law. You were saying you didn't think that the federal law applies to you anyway, so that's another angle on it. But if you had a federal marijuana law, it could be worded in a way that would give states a choice whether to have it or not. And I think that would appeal to a lot of conservatives. And I think we could really have this, and any person that runs on that ticket, I think, could very well be our next president.
Barney Frank has already has that bill. It has 60 co-sponsors in the House.
My question for you is, what actually got into the trial? The judge has tried to keep out everything, but did any even mentioned hint of medical marijuana come into the trial?
There were hints of it. The judge started it when he voir dired the jury and asked them if they had strong opinions about medical marijuana. And the jurors heard each other, and 20 of the panel of 52 prospective jurors told the judge that they could not be impartial because they had such strong feelings that medical marijuana should be used.
Were those jurors dismissed?
Yes. Then during the trial, one of the government witnesses, Bob Martin, who was given a get-out-of-jail-free card for snitching, he admitted that what I did was, or he said, what he said is, and I'm paraphrasing him, I buy a marijuana plant for $5, I sell it for $10 so the patient can grow their own medicine and make their life better. And he did say that on the stand. But the jurors couldn't put it all together. They knew there was something about it, but they were less informed than you would think.
Right. I mean, on pain of something. I mean, they were ordered to be less informed.
And once they learned about it, they were really sorrowful. They really had, you know, I have no regrets about what I did because I know that what I did helped thousands of people. But that jury, the members of that jury, unfortunately, because of government manipulation, do have regrets now.
Yes, thank you, Larry.
Hey, much love, Ed and Carolyn.
Thank you. So, yes. Also, a friend suggested, too, again, it is experimental time, isn't it, that she was saying everyone who's using medical marijuana volunteer to share the sentencing. Petition the judge beforehand going, all right, and we have 100,000 people here. They'll each take 3 days.
Maybe 3 minutes.
Three minutes. Let's get it down to 3 minutes with more volunteers. Okay, call up to sign up. 3 minutes in prison. We'll spell this and create a whole new, whatever, precedent. That precedent's the word.
You know, though, everybody should spend a few days in prison. And let me explain why. Prison is one of the most, people don't realize what a simple jail is like. But the jails are built and designed, and the procedures are meant to demean people, to make people think less of themselves, to make people uncomfortable. When I was there during that 36 hours, there's not a chair in that whole place that's comfortable. There's no place where you can sit down and relax. There's no place where even the bed, it's a bed of concrete with a thin pad on it. And can you imagine living years like that? These jails are terrible. Every judge should have to spend like 3 months in prison before they sentence anybody to one day in jail.
Absolutely.
We'd see how much time judges would be giving people. Jail is terrible. And the people who are involved in designing the jails, running the jails, working in the jails, they're near criminals. They're just near criminals. It should not be like that. If you think by putting a prisoner in and making a prisoner suffer like that when they come out that you're going to have a better citizen, that isn't what it's about. When they say penitentiary, that was meant to be to punish. But what about rehabilitation? There is none. Most of the people who I met in my 36 hours in jail really had education deficiencies. Maybe that's part of the reason why they were there. That's not being solved in jail. Instead of treating people as animals in cages, there has to be a better way for most of these crimes.
Absolutely. Although your first paragraph of describing prisons, I was like, well, airports too. I mean, but yeah. I mean, I don't want to demean at all what you said because that's absolutely true. And we have many listeners. Hello, listeners in San Quentin. We have many listeners also on death row in San Quentin. Hello, Jarvis. Hello, teammates as well. And what they've also told us is not only all that you said and more, but for instance, on death row, they never turn the lights out. I mean, some of these people have been there, you know, 12 years. When I say to friends and to Jarvis, you know, what prayers would you wish to have our collective community send to you? And he goes, a dark night. you know, again, just that. That it, and again, it's this devotion, this reckless disregard for life, and this raising of the misery index, going, we're raising the misery index because that's the gross national product, is misery, and we're exporting it to the rest of the world. And absolutely also what you say about empathy. I mean, part of the fierce blessing is, you know, may those who are imposing anything on anybody have an empathic experience of being in Baghdad, of being in prison, absolutely, in order for the evolution of the human soul. Definitely. Craig in Mid Pines, come in.
Hi. You know, I've only ever spent one night in the L.A. County jail for a jaywalking ticket that went to warrant, but I noticed that they didn't turn the lights off. And even from that, spending that short a time, it was no longer just theoretical that these places are meant to break people's spirits. Pure and simple. So, yeah, that was definitely worth saying. In fact, what I was going to start with here, I have a bunch I want to go over, but the first thing I wanted to really say is I think it's time for Amnesty International to adopt your case and all the others as prisoners of conscience. This is very clear-cut to me, and I think that would be a great step forward for the movement. I don't know, are you aware of any contact that's been made in that direction?
No, I haven't. But I heard today that there were demonstrations in front of in front of U.S. embassies in several countries in Europe over the last few days.
Really?
Yes.
In Europe?
Yes.
Interesting. Well, I mean that as a serious proposal. I mean, I don't know who you're working with that has time to make that contact, but I really think it should be done. You know, it makes such a powerful statement to be declared a prisoner of conscience. For God's sake.
Well, may it not be so, but may, again, to be
well, right.
Opposed
as
a prisoner of conscience.
We hope he doesn't have to spend time rotting in prison. But another thing along those lines, really, even a further extension, I don't have the details on this, but I know that there are people who are in the process of applying for asylum as refugees in Canada on this very issue. Do you know about that, Ed?
Oh, yeah. In fact, my co-defendant left for Canada shortly shortly before the indictments came down, and he just decided not to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's still up there.
I thought that Canada, though, I have a friend in some similar circumstance, and I thought that Canada was just polite about it. They turn you over to the authorities politely.
I don't think so, because Steve Cubby is up there.
And, right. And having a fine time, okay.
Yeah, he's doing okay.
Ah.
Ken Hayes is up there.
Oh, really? Okay. They're not extraditing.
Yes,
no, I'm not
Steve
just
Cuck.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm not just talking about people who are doing what happened, the kind of thing that people did during the Vietnam War, you know, where people wanted to evade the draft, and they just went up there quietly. But I'm talking about actually applying for asylum. For refugee status from the United States government.
That's what we're just talking about. The
you
three
were.
People that we mentioned have applied for refugee status.
They are,
status.
Okay. Because it sounded like you were saying they were living there just quietly. Okay, so those are the people that are doing this?
Those are three of the people.
Yeah,
there
they're, very, they're very noisy, apparently. They're
and
not quiet
they're very,
at all.
Yes,
yeah.
They're very noisy. You can watch Steve Cubby on POT TV uh-huh. On the Internet. He has several shows a week.
Well, all I can say is, on that issue, is I don't know if there's any real likelihood of Canada coming through with a favorable response to that, but if they do, wow, you know, that's another...
Well, we will be speaking to their spiritual supervisors right now as well.
Yeah. The last kind of general thing I want to say about this is every time this comes up, I'm a long-time political activist. I've got lots of issues on my plate. I have to admit that marijuana legalization, medical marijuana, hasn't been one of them, but I feel
until now
so strongly every time one of these cases explodes again, and it makes me hark back to the American Revolution. I really think it's on a par with the kinds of things that drove the American colonists to rebellion against the tyrannical imposition of unjust laws by Great Britain.
Absolutely. Thank you, Craig. Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And what do you feel is brewing now? I mean, the sudden.
Well, I think that we're in line for change. We're going to take two steps to the left this month.
Absolutely. Let's go to Muin in Santa Rosa. Come in.
Hi. I'm thanking you very much for your show. Once again, I'm really grateful for the personal chance to do that. And to both of you for your tenacity and in your integrity, and extra gratitude for mentioning Nelson Mandela. And
yeah.
for our brothers and sisters on the inside, I work in the jail.
Yes.
And I know how important your show is to them. So thank you for saying hello to them. And I have just a comment. I'll get off the phone so that maybe you could, I don't know if you want to talk about it at all, but it's in the future because it's about the muta of marijuana. And I'm really glad, Ed, that you mentioned that it is not a drug, that it is an herb, but it's not an ornamental herb. It is a medicinal herb. And as a health practitioner in the jail and someone who really strongly proposes and has seen this as a really, really important issue, not just for medical marijuana, but all decriminalization. But I'd love, you know, it's fine to start with the medical use. I think that's a really wise move. But I just want to say that at some point when we're all able to talk about it more freely and the use of it more freely, that it is medicine. It does affect the kidney energy. It can be overused. It does need to be not necessarily monitored professionally or legally, but just that people do need to be educated about the use of it, how to use it, how much to use, and when it is, perhaps affecting people I don't want to say a negative or a toxic way, but there are ways that it can impede some health because of the ways that it can be overused and the doses and also even the length of the use or the amount of use on a daily basis. So
yeah.
I think that someday we'll get to talk about that because I've seen clinically the effects of that.
I think that day is here now. Thank you. Thank you, Miwan. Those are important things. I think the idea of, when we did a show with Jeremy Narby and somebody called up going, well, we're glad you're talking about responsible drug use. And I said, oh, responsible sounds so grown up. Can we talk about reverent use of sacraments and kinship? And when you talk also, Ed, too, I mean, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the human relationship to marijuana is as old as the human relationship to dogs, isn't it?
It goes back at least 10,000 years.
Oh, okay, dogs is a little bit older, but we hope they're not outlawed.
But in many cultures, it was the first plant cultivated by humans.
Right.
And it helped these cultures change and evolve because it provided so many resources. It was a source of food, of course, but also of fiber, both for clothing and for rope, so that the Chinese symbol for house is the same as the symbol for cannabis.
Right.
That's how closely related it was. And, you know, there is no such thing as wild cannabis now, because all cannabis that exists had some sort of interaction with humans. And so there's an artifactual relationship. So we would say that it's feral rather than wild.
Right, right. Interesting. And also in traditional herbology, marijuana is associated with Saturn, which is interesting. Saturn is about focus and purpose and age and reverence and ritual. So friends of mine who are in their 60s go, yeah, it's for old people. There is that point. But I think Muin's point is interesting, to be able to have a discourse going. I mean, I had the great good fortune, as I mentioned, you know, off air before we began, to have older grown-up friends when I was a teenager who had legal importer's license for marijuana and cocaine because they worked at NIMH. And so I grew up, you know, with sort of raw responsible drug use. I mean, there was a lot of irresponsible too, but in the sense of with reverence involved, and with a sense of its qualities and with appreciation.
That's right. Well, I think,
and it's an ally.
You know, if anybody who's read Huxley's book Island, it was a form of bonding, and also using that drugs were actually used as a form of development. And I can see a time, even in the United States, when we get back to that level. We were near that in the 60s, and then the government forced us out of that mode.
And also, when we think about, you know, a culture war, in Philip Pullman's great trilogy, the Dark Matter trilogy, everyone has their daemon, their kind of animal companion spirit that accompanies them through life. And the forces of evil, attempt to generate energy by separating children from their daemons, this idea of breaching. And when I've had Native American Lakota leaders on the show, too, they say if you want to destroy a culture, you first rip into its ceremonial rituals of kinship with nature. You destroy its relationship to the animals, to the plants, And also it's ambiguous sexual spiritual practices. And then you've won.
It seems like they've been trying to do that for a while.
They have, but I guess we're...
And we have the supreme leader of that philosophy as our attorney general now.
Oh, yes, Ashcroft. Yes, that's right. And I don't know if you saw the story in which Calico Cats came out and said that we view Ashcroft as the devil. Because there's the more than rumor, the actual accurate thing that Ashcroft views Calico Cats as a sign of the devil and advance teams up to clear them out.
The part that I like about Ashcroft is that not every country can say that their attorney general thinks that watching a ballet is sinful.
Yeah, no, it is such a level of hubristic cartoon that.
Did you ever think about the really fundamentalist Islamicists and Ashcroft don't have much? They have more in common than the two groups have with us.
Yes, it is extremely spooky, and it is again the nakedness of the cartoon is so evident, and the arrogant hubristic nature. I think many of us, you know, what Craig was saying also about activism and prioritizing, sort of triaging, but it is all one story. And right now, for those of us, you know, the administration does give us conniption fits because you look and go, oh god, they appointed a homophobe to the AIDS council. Oh god, no, they put your judge is Stephen Breyer's. Oh, I mean, so it does, and so you need. I mean, the one thing that I can't remember his name, but the mainstream guy on TV after the election, he was asked about what he thought about the Nevada laws on marijuana going down. And he said, well, that's too bad because it's going to take about 2 ounces to recover from this election. So that was the only bright spot on election night. Let's go to Deborah in Berkeley really quick.
Hi. We all know that particularly the private prisons industry needs bodies, and this is also a way to take the vote away from hundreds of thousands of African-American citizens. That become more clear to me that that's part of the whole venture. But I've been encouraged by this recent change on the death sentence and the moratoria and the commutation of the people on death row. I think it was in
Illinois.
So, you know, I'm thinking maybe there is hope that, or at the very least, severe economic crisis in the states may require.
And that's good, Deborah. And let me give that to Ed because we're on our way out. Thank you. Tipping point. Yes.
Well, it may require. Here's what: there are many things that it could require. I mean. They may think that they need more prisons, or they may think, hey, let's start getting rid of the nonviolent prisoners and use some common sense in sentencing and in maybe reexamine our laws.
And
Who knows?
We have to suck the money out of the prison complex and all of that complicity, too. Yeah.
And I have to suck some money out of KPFA listeners.
Yes, let's do it.
Yes, please. If you think that this case is important, if you think this case can affect your life, we need your help. Please contribute to Green Aid. That's green-aid.com. And you can look it up. It will tell you everything about what's going on in these cases. It's really important. This is the tipping point case, folks. For years, we've been wanting to confront this issue. We're confronting it. We need your help.
Absolutely. Green-aid.
You know, I just want to say one thing. I don't feel like I'm begging. I'm not asking them to do it for me because, folks, you do it for yourselves because this is the case. You've been wanting, we've been saying we need the case. They chose this case, but we can win this case. And when we win this case, these laws come tumbling down.
Woof. Green-aid.com. Fund the tipping point cases. It's crucial. We're not going to let the Ed Rosenthal part of us, who is too honorable and valuable for us to let that part of our soul be kidnapped. Thank you always, dear listeners. Thank you, Stephanie Hendricks. Woof, woof. Always to Jim Bennett. And thank you very much, Lisa Ballard, and to the wild blooming of the compassionate trickster heart within all of us and certainly within Ed Rosenthal. I'm Caroline Casey. We'll reconvene again next week. Thank you.
Thank you, Carolyn. See you all.
Yay.
Oh, by the way, Friday at 5. Friday at 5. Yes, I'm on the Dennis Bernstein Show.
Excellent.
I think he's giving me 15 minutes every Friday.
Excellent.
Great.
Woof.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There will be a pre-Mardi Gras ball to benefit East Bay Food Not Bombs Friday, February 21st at the Humanist Hall, 4128th Street between Telegraph and Broadway in Oakland, 7 p.m. doors.